Joining me on Impact Catalyst today is Lisa Unger, a well-known and respected local author. It is good to meet you. So we are now in our third installment, fourth if you count our original one with Susanna Weymouth, but third one with regard to bringing on the winners of the Charlie Onchel Art Star Scholarship. And today we're looking at literary arts, and you were the judge for that. First, can you please introduce yourself to the audience and so we get to know you, for those who don't know you?
Absolutely. My name is Lisa Unger, and I am the New York Times bestselling author of 18 novels of psychological suspense. And upcoming is my October release, Confessions on the 745. And there really isn't much else to say about me.
That's, 18 books, New York Times bestseller. I think, just please try to do a little more, So you've been involved with this, with the TBBCA and judging this the literary arts for a while. What drew you to want to participate in this scholarship?
Well, Charlie Hunchell was a friend of mine, very dear friend. And when we lost him, it was such a shock, such a surprise, you always think you have so much time with your friends, we're always so busy running around. And then all of a sudden, he's gone. And I felt, just obviously tremendous grief and very bereft. And so this is sort of my way of reconnecting with him every year and reconnecting with this love that he had of the arts and this like sort of joy that he found in young people in the arts. And so every year I feel like I get to connect with him. And then also as a writer myself, it's always very joyful to be exposed to this pool of young talent, because I think sometimes we worry that maybe, our young people are losing that kind of creative fire. And every year I'm just joyful to see how many kids are writing and writing so well and writing so passionately. So that's, those are the two things that I love the most about this award.
So when you have that fear, you're saying that with the submissions that you saw and in general exposure to that age of writers, you are seeing that there's still some good creative fire burning out there.
Absolutely. And I see it also, unfortunately this year we don't have the opportunity to have the event, but every year the Art Stars event is just amazing. We have, visual artists, literary arts, of course, as well as, musicians and singers and dancers. And every year, it's just, you're just blown away by how creative and how talented our local kids are and how they're, some of these fantastic schools that are really promoting the arts in a significant way. So it's very, it's a very powerful event. So I'll look forforward to hopefully next year being, everybody being back together.
Yeah. And nothing measures up to, the experience of being there, but we do have a second place, if not distant second, to variation on that and recording them and having them, produced. And we'll be airing that show at the end of this series in next week. So people will still get to see the performance, albeit digitally.
And maybe even it has a further reach because we're online. So maybe that's like the benefit. Some of us are, in the industry are talking about that as well. Just like this is a new way to connect with people who might not be able to come out or who are not local to, maybe connect with these young people as well.
Absolutely. And at the very least, I think it's going to inspire some hybrid efforts that are part in person, part virtual, because, a lot of people just even for geographical or transportation restrictions can enjoy it. So with this literary award, the types of works that were coming in, you could have poetry, it was a wide swath of different types of work. So having to choose one from among those, what was that sort of common thread that you were looking for in reviewing these?
Yeah, and it is always a challenge every year because usually there are a few people who are really strong and who you wish you could just, you know, you could give everybody an award. And the submissions did range from short stories to poetry, and in some cases we've had screenplays, and other years we've had plays. So it really has, you know, sort of run the gamut of a different type of every different type of writing. But for me, you know, when I first just start reading, I actually kind of put the application part behind the work because I don't want to see anybody's name. I'm not interested in where they go to school or where they come from or anything. All I want is the words on the page. And, you know, there's an indefinable something that you can feel the minute you see it, right? Like, so lots of kids can write a good poem or, you know, even a serviceable short story. And that's a great thing. It's a great thing to have that skill. But there's a lot of stuff that you can go to school and learn how to do it. But, you know, in many ways, a writer is born and not made. And I think that there's like a vibration in the work that you can hear and, you know, and feel, and that's the thing that I'm looking for every single time.
That actually parallels what we had Eugenie Bondron on a couple of episodes ago, and she talked about acting and sort of similar sentiment in that that technical prowess seems to be readily available, but it's that, you know, that's something that, you know, they actually look surprised when they're supposed to be surprised and not just, you know, going through a sound process, but you know, to get that rawness in there. And I think authenticity wins the day, you know, and talent, of course. So with that being said, Vin Huang was the winner. Can you talk about why specifically he made it to the top?
Yeah, Vin had a very strong submission all through his work. He had a number of short stories as well as some very moving poetry. Mainly, it was his work with The Cog and the Machine that really moved me. Usually with young writers, you know, they sort of err on the side of kind of, you know, bigger is better, you know, florid language, outlandish kind of plots and ideas. And like, this is not a bad thing. I see it in my own early writing. You know, it's just kind of a thing that you do. You have all this like stuff in you that you kind of, you know, you want to express, and like, that's how you do it. But in Vin's case, you know, he exerted so much control over every sentence in the story that he wrote, The Cog and the Machine, and his imagery was so simple, but so evocative, that I really just felt that he had I could really just hear his authentic and unique voice in the work. And ultimately, even though there were a number of people who were very talented as well, that was the thing that set him apart for me.
Well, we have the pleasure of having Ben in the waiting room, and we'll bring him in to join us. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
How are you? First of all, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So you submitted a few pieces. Lisa had some wonderful things to say about really the control you showed with your writing, how you were able to, to really evoke a lot of feeling, show your authenticity, but do it in a really, what was the word you used, Lisa?
Restrained.
Restrained. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about your process and how you feel, your writing style comes out?
Well, you know, you're only as good as what you experience, what you read, what you watch. You know, and in that case, I've always been interested in books and movies, and so I draw inspirations from here and there to create something that's wholly my own. You know, and I was never a fan of flowery language too much, because you can get over descriptive, you can be boring. And so you try to put, it's minimalism, you know, you try to put the most that you can in as little as possible. And so there's a lot of influences in my work from stuff like that, from writers, from directors.
So do you have a process by which you curate your influences? Do you actively go seek content to explore a certain emotion or process?
sometimes they just like they come to me. For example, like I'll look at a video, or I'll remember a memory, right? For example, a while back I was at a beach in Providence, somewhere in Rhode Island, and I just saw I saw this little girl running with her dog with her mom and stuff. I was like, wow, that's really pretty. And then I started to think, like, what if I came to this beach and I saw that, but I also saw this shell, because we found a shell, this really big, beautiful shell. What if like it was in the sand and it was beautiful, it was shining, but then the waves come and then wash it away. That's it. And a lot of stories don't have to be, in my personal experience, when I am in that process, I don't try to make it seem like, oh, and then this bully comes in and attacks the girl, or a whale becomes docked onto the shore, we must push it out. It's more about like the quiet moments, you know? The small moments that in the long run you might not think means anything at all. But the minute details inside of it, it can be something that people can explore. And that's what without sounding pretentious, it's something I tried to do.
So when hearing that, it's no surprise that you also submitted poetry. And it feels like then you're not necessarily... I guess I'll just ask you, what is your relationship with narrative and story and the power of story? Clearly, you're expressing a way to go forward without that and still finding value in the content. Do you feel a pressure to bring story, or do you feel it's necessary in certain circumstances? What's sort of your relationship with the power of story?
I love narratives. I love stories. It's something that is overarching in everyone's life. You know, everyone has their own story and stuff. But I'm not exactly pressured to put a story in everything. Sometimes, for example, in poetry, it doesn't have to be a story. It can be a still. Think of it like that, like a still that you just, or a painting. You are just looking at it in that one singular frame or moment, and you can see so much. It doesn't have to build to anything, but if you just take it as how it is, then it can be transformed into something very pretty or beautiful or very strong with commentary, you know?
So Lisa, and you know, you mentioned that with Vin's, you know, restrained nature for writing, you know, I would take that to mean that he has, a little bit of a wisdom, kind of an old soul vibe as well. Having heard the answers that he's given the last couple of questions, does that follow that same path?
Absolutely. I mean, that sort of old soul, that kind of like indefinable thing that can't be taught, you know, Ben has that. So I could definitely feel that. And also just sort of, I love that idea that, you know, it's really the very small moments that have the biggest impact on our lives. I mean, that is definitely a theme that kind of runs through my work. And, you know, just in my personal observations, you know, it really is the biggest stories are held within the smallest moments. And I really feel that, you know, Vin is, clearly he's in touch with that, and it resonates in his work for sure.
And Vin, having this, having these things inside of you at your age, what's been your comfort level? I mean, obviously there's the, you know, the usual, hormonal changes and high school environment and all that good stuff. How have you found it to find avenues to express this comfortably? And how much do you feel like you have to hold back because of the world?
I personally don't feel like anyone should hold too, at least most people should not hold too much back in their writing. If it's personal to them, and if they can find a good way, a good facet to express that, through words, through language. I say go for it. Me personally, I've never really held anything back. Any sort of story that you read that I wrote, whether it be funny or sad or filled with a melancholic ennui, you know, I don't know. It's just me at that moment, me trying to hold on to that feeling before it escapes away. And if it does escape away, maybe later on in time, it will come back and I can continue working on that piece. You know?
And I feel like that's a beautiful juxtaposition for literature, is that you can not hold back yet be restrained, and to take all of that, you know, that energy and sort of intensify the density of it and put it behind the words, you know, without having to go over the top in description or, you know, quantity or, you know, any other maybe louder outlets of emotion. So that's a nice place you found, Ben.
It's like a blacksmith refining like steel, you know, just bending it over and over, it becomes really pure. You throw everything on there first, but then you get into what you really want to talk about. So,
well, congratulations again. We'll look forward to hearing your reading at the final show, which will be at the end of this series. And got some big plans for the fall. You're hoping to get into Brown. Is that the plan?
That is the plan. That is 100% the plan.
Well, tell him you know a Times bestselling author that'll give him a recommendation. I bet that'll get you a few steps down the road.
It might.
I'm not so sure. Maybe.
Well, thank you both. Thank you, Lisa, for your support of young writers and TBBCA. And Vin, congrats again. Well done. Well deserved. And we look forward to watching you at the show. And make sure when you hit it off that you stay down here. You don't move away, and you come back down here and live forever. That's the only catch to the scholarship they didn't tell you about.
Okay.
Just to you. All right, guys. Thank you.